You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Now, as mentioned for our entrepreneurship segment today, we're profiling Virgil, who is the CEO of Deal City in Kenya, which is a mobile advertising solutions company basing its major functions on big data and analytics, and whose broad range of advanced features allows clients to get the most out of mobile marketing and ultimately generate more revenue. Let's see if we've got him on a better line. Good evening, Sam.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
I can hear you perfectly. I'm good. Thanks for asking. And yourself?
I'm doing well.
Fantastic. How was your day?
My day was pretty good. I was actually trying to rush home so that I can make sure I get here for this interview. So,
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Can I confirm the time in Kenya? This site, it's 1919.
Yes. Well, I'm actually next door to you in Zimbabwe right now.
Oh.
So it's also 1919.
Okay. That makes sense. Now, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. Virgil, I pronounced that correctly, right?
Correct. One of the few people who actually got it correct.
Look at me. I could have made up for myself right there. But thank you so much, sir, for joining us this evening. On Wednesdays, we do this thing called entrepreneurship. And precisely because we want to showcase some of the leading entrepreneurs in Africa, but also, we've got young people who are aspiring entrepreneurs. And some of them might be following you. Some of them might be learning of you today on this talk. And they want to get into business as well and maybe might be wondering how they do that. And so these kind of topics and discussions with yourselves and people like yourselves are really important, and we really appreciate your time. So I want to start here. Can you please tell us then a little bit about yourself? Who is Virgil? Where do you come from? And what makes you tick? What makes you, think differently about things? But basically, who are you?
Yeah, interesting question. So I'm 38 years old, first of all. I'm 38 years old. I'm a husband. I have a daughter.
Okay.
And I've grown up Adventist. So I think one of the things that has sort of kind of driven me in life was trying to see how I could make the world a better place, first for my family, and then broaden it out to everyone else. Mm. So those are the kind of things that kind of make me do what I do.
Yeah. Okay. And then growing up, where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I was born in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
But stayed for a little bit, I think until I was 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And then I moved to America.
Okay.
Until I was about 15.
Okay.
And then I lived in Kenya for a number of years. Then moved to South Africa. I think I stayed in South Africa for a bit. Then moved back to Kenya. And now I'm in between Kenya, Zimbabwe, and South Africa, and Botswana. Yeah.
So lots of traveling. How's that, in fact, living across so many countries?
Well, it's interesting. I'm just here to meet the different cultures and seeing how people do things, the same things differently.
Yeah.
So that's the exciting part. The traveling part is not so fun.
Okay. I hear that after traveling so much, it gets boring. You're like, oh, another traveling again.
Yeah, definitely.
that's very interesting. Okay, can you tell us then a little bit about Deal City? Is it based in Kenya, and what do you guys do?
Yeah, so the company was started in Kenya, and now it's now in Zimbabwe, and we're trying to open up offices in South Africa and Botswana.
Mm.
But I'm trying to even remember exactly what you said, because you said it so well. What we do basically is look for companies that have big databases. So companies like banks, supermarkets, radio stations, and we help them understand their customers better using big data. And then we also help them come up with e-commerce solutions to also gain new revenue from the customers that they have.
Mm. That sounds very complicated. If you were to break it down for a layman, so you use the company's already, I suppose, collected data, and you look for solutions inside that data.
Exactly.
Ah, okay. Okay, that makes sense. Now, how did you end up here?
So, interesting enough, so inspiration comes from many places. And I think where I actually really got the idea was I was working in South Africa with one of the phone networks there. And we were working on a project that allowed the phone network to take advantage of the millions of customers that they had.
Okay.
Help them have better shopping experiences, help them understand products better. And so after I left that company and I went to work at a different company, after gaining experience, I thought I started seeing places where that project would started in South Africa could have worked in, you know, places like Kenya, places like Zimbabwe. And I saw the need, so that's when I started the company. And yes, got a team together and got some funding together, and yeah, we put it together.
Is this something that you've always wanted to do, or you saw an opportunity and then you went after it?
So growing up, I've always wanted to be a CEO.
Yeah.
My dad is a pastor.
Okay.
And we used to go around visiting church members' houses and go pray for them.
Yeah.
And I'd go to a lot of the affluent church members' houses and I'd always ask my dad, you know, what does this person do after seeing maybe a pool or a nice car in front of the yard? And I kept on hearing that, this person's a CEO for this bank, or this person's a CEO for this.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know what it was, but I just knew that growing up,
that's what I want. Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
So later on, I found out that, you know, you could either be a CEO by being hired, or you could make up your own company and, you know, appoint yourself that position. So
yes.
I took the easiest route.
You decided to appoint yourself rather than wait to be.
Exactly.
That's definitely the easiest way out of this, eh? Because sometimes if you're going to wait, you might wait forever and ever and ever,
yeah,
and it never comes.
No,
so
one's gonna give you the job.
Exactly. So find the easiest way out. Now, when did you start the business again?
So the business started in 2018.
Okay.
Yes. So we're about to turn six.
And just as a high level, the journey so far, how has that been? The 6 years, I'm sure COVID into 2020 also had a bit of an impact on the business.
Yeah. I mean, so when we began the business, it was, you know, we had all high hopes. We thought everything was going to go great. And, you know, the first 2 years were almost probably some of the worst years of my life because everything just crashed. You know, nothing was really working. And then surprisingly during COVID, that's when our business actually started to pick up because now people were into the digital solutions.
Yeah.
They wanted help on how they could get to their customers without actually physically being there. So COVID was a blessing for us in disguise. And that's when we really picked up.
That's really interesting. That's certainly really, really interesting. Because some of the guys that we speak to, of course, depending on the industry that they are in, they'll talk about how COVID, for instance, has been very difficult on their businesses and kind of challenged them to find innovative ways to just stay afloat and not really close their businesses. So it's really interesting to hear that for you it has been almost the opposite. And then one would ask, what makes your business then stand out, or what makes it different from all the other big data companies out there? Because it seems like data is the newest currency these days.
Yeah, it is. And look, I think for us, what helps us really understand, stand out from other people is we're really passionate about what we do. So, you know, we spend hours with my team just talking about, you know, things that we do, new mm-hmm. solutions, how can we do this better? Mm-hmm. And we genuinely enjoy doing what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find some of the companies just do it for the sake of doing it. So mm-hmm. they'll leave some things unturned. But for us, we really keep, you know, afloat of what we're doing. And then we've also really built great relationships along the way.
Okay.
That's really a big part of, you know, how you also, you know, get yourself into the market. We've built really great relationships and have sort of tried to leverage off that.
That's really interesting. How did you raise capital in 2018 when you started the business? Because one of the things that one hears, again, from most entrepreneurs we speak to is the issue of capital raising to start the business. How easy was it for you? And maybe what was the route that you took? Did you also take the shorter route there?
No. I wish. That one was a bit more complex.
Yeah.
raising capital is a very challenging thing.
Yeah.
You know, try to think about asking somebody to maybe lend you, you know, $200 or, you know, 2,000 rand. You'll see how hard that will be, you know. Now, businesses need quite a bigger amount of money when you're beginning. One of the things we had to do was really rely on, you know, you first start off with your inner circle, people that actually know you and trust you.
Yeah.
So these could be family, friends, people you've done business with across a number of years. So, you know, I reached out to them. Luckily, I'd been working at another company. I'd worked with many other people and had good relationships. So the first amount of funding I had to really leverage off, you know, the relationships that I had to say, okay, this is what I'm trying to build.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to put money to this? And, you know, that kind of thing. That's usually the first step because you don't really have anything to show. But an idea. So that was sort of our first step. And we got funding from, you know, different people that we'd worked with across the number of years.
Sure. That's interesting. I mean, that must have been a little bit risky from a relationship point of view. I mean, if this thing doesn't work, which normally happens, you know, when you start a business, and statistics tells you that a lot of small businesses fail in their first 3 years. Was that risky for you, and how did you manage that risk?
So, yeah, no, it was definitely risky. And the first 2 years, like I said, everything didn't work out well. Like, we literally, things were just crashing. We ran out of money at some point. So, again, those relationships, it can be risky, but it also comes into your favor in that you're able to actually have a conversation with them if you're open. So we're actually able to sit down and say, look, this is what has happened. Can you give us more time? This is, you know, the situation on the ground. And, you know, if you're speaking to your auntie or a good friend,
they
are more likely to listen if you have a track record of doing that. So that's kind of, yes, it was risky, but it also worked out in favor that when things did go bad, you're able to have a conversation than maybe trying to speak to a bank and asking them for more time.
A bank would never understand. They want their money. They've already calculated their repayments from the moment you walk out of that store. They already have. Talk about the first customer. What was that like? I'm sure it must have been like you threw a party or something. And we're like, yes, we've landed our first customer. What was that like? And how do you then continue to build your customer base?
Yeah, so our first customer, that was like, it was like the, you know, like the best day in the world. I'm looking at it back now. We didn't really get paid that much money, but at that moment, it felt like everything we're trying to do had been validated.
Yes.
And, you know, I think we actually ended up running that campaign at a loss.
Okay.
Because we just wanted to do so much. We're putting in, like, let's put this and do this and do that and do that. But even though we ended up putting way more into it than we got, that client ended up, you know, referring us to another client, who gave referrals to a client, and that kind of thing.
That's beautiful. And would you say the customer base now, in terms of its growth, has been through word of mouth as well?
Yeah. So, you know, so what we do is sort of, it's very, like I said, relationship based.
Mm.
There are only a certain number of banks or supermarkets or radio stations that you can talk to versus if you're selling like a mass market product, like a cake or something.
Mm.
So it's really, like you just said, word of mouth.
Yeah.
A client sees what you're doing for another client, and then they come ask you to do it. Or they might tell you, oh, I know somebody else who wants this. Can you call this person? I can put a word for you.
Mm.
And that's really how we started to grow.
You started to grow. That's amazing. Now, you spoke earlier on about, almost traveling between three or four countries at the same time. And with your expansion strategy as well, getting to South Africa and perhaps other markets as well. I'm sure you're a busy man. What does your day typically look like? What time do you wake up and what time do you go to bed? What happens in between?
Yeah, so my alarm rings at 4 a.m.
Okay.
But I actually end up waking up probably maybe at 5:30, sometimes 6.
Oh, really? Wait. Your alarm goes off at 4 and you wake up at 5.
And end up losing it.
I thought I was bad, but that's really interesting. Okay.
So mostly I start off, my wife and I usually have worship together.
Yes.
So we usually have worship together, and so we do that. And she runs her own thing, so I sometimes advise her on her business. So we talk about what she's gonna do. And then there's a school run in the morning where I have to drop off my daughter at school.
Mm.
So after that, it's straight to the office.
Yeah.
As soon as I get there, I'll have reports from my executive assistant who will let me know what we have to do in Kenya, what we're doing here, what projects are pending, what meetings are there for. And then I start meeting with different members of my team. So it could be finance, it could be marketing, it could be sales. So after those meetings, there's usually always something that goes wrong.
Oh.
Something has to go wrong.
That's interesting.
So you wait for that surprise.
Yeah.
Some vendor didn't supply something. Maybe a delivery bike broke down. One time, somewhere, one of our, bikers had been in an accident. So, so something has to happen. But in between then, like I said, our business is built a lot on relationships.
Mm.
So sometimes you're taking somebody out for lunch, discussing how the project is going, trying to get some other information of things that people might need. Mm. And then the day usually ends. I like to end my day early. I don't really work super late, so by around 3, I'm rounding up.
Okay.
I get home and I finish work maybe from 5 to 7.
Yeah.
Then for 7, it's sort of family time.
Mm.
Hang out with my wife. Sometimes we might watch something. We might read a book side by side or something. Yeah, and then I get back to work again, and then fall asleep to do it again.
Okay. It's interesting. Get back to work after that. Okay. Now I think you've touched on what I really wanted to also talk about. How has entrepreneurship affected your business? I'm sure if you look back, there's times when you're like, here you've extended yourself, trying to set up things, and maybe now things are better, and therefore you can have, like you said, family time and all that. What has been the impact so far?
Yeah. So I think when you're sort of like an entrepreneur, your day is not as defined. Like I was telling you, something else happens. It might be I have to leave to go to another country.
Yeah.
So you really have to have an understanding spouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's something that, it's very difficult to do if you both are not on the same page. So it does have that effect on the family life, especially when you're trying to build something really impactful. But I found out that it's really important to find those times where you can actually spend time together. And sometimes it'll be like, okay, fine, I'm going here, let's go together, and you try to make sure that you you make work, but you obviously sometimes miss, you know, your child's school things. Sometimes it's you know, so there's a sort of like a trade-off.
Yeah.
And figuring out also how to, you know, make sure that trade-off is not too strenuous on the family is something that you sort of have to constantly be aware of.
So striking that balance is always very, very important. Expectations versus reality. I'm sure when you started the business, you had this huge, and maybe you might say dreams, expectations and all that. Did that culminate into reality, or you had to do a little bit of adjustment on what you expected and what was done, then the reality of running the business?
Definitely had to adjust. Definitely had to adjust. Naturally, if you're an entrepreneur, your mind is always optimistic. So you always think the best case scenario. We're going to do this, and it's going to be the biggest, it's going to be the best. But the reality is usually it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And it usually goes nowhere near what you expected. It took some time to actually make that realization, because after you know, failing so many times in different things, you're like, okay, fine. I now need to be more realistic. If we start this, we want it to work in maybe 6 months, but reality is it might take 2 years. So when your mindset is now in that space, it makes it easier for you to now navigate the challenges that come when you actually, you know, face that reality.
Yeah. So meaning one needs to be very agile around this entrepreneurship thing and some of the challenges that you face. That's what I'm getting. Now, as we draw closer to an end, what drives you as an entrepreneur?
So I want to say it's sort of changed over the period of time.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it was very money driven to say, okay, fine, I can make this money, I can get this car, I can do these things. But what you start to notice is you'll burn out very quickly if that's actually all that you're chasing.
Yeah.
And I started now learning sort of to love exactly what we're doing. Love the journey. The process, you know, meeting new people, actually delivering a solution that makes things better for other people. And when that started happening, it sort of kept on driving me to say, okay, fine, how much impact can we actually make with the organization that we're building? And when you chase that, you always realize that the money actually starts to follow. As a result, then you actually just chasing the money. Because when you're chasing the money, the many shortcuts it'll make you want to take.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, yeah.
Sure. All right. What would you do differently if you were to start all over again?
Actually, absolutely nothing.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, the reason why I say that is that I've learned so many lessons in even the mistakes that I've made, or the things gone wrong. So those mistakes, the things that have gone wrong, if that had not happened, you know, that it probably would not have taken us to the next level where we needed to get into. So even though some of the things are really painful, there's so much that I've learned from those situations. So if I was to change it, I probably wouldn't be where, you know, where we are today. So I don't, the lessons definitely that I've learned that I don't want ever repeated, but if you tell me what would I change, I don't think I would actually change anything.
So what would be then your most satisfying moment if you look at just that journey then?
I think there's one time where we were going through a really tough time. And, you know, we were almost literally almost going bankrupt. You know, the investors were asking for money and all this. And at that time, I remember I was praying a lot. And it didn't seem like any answers. And then one day I just got a call from somebody who I didn't even know.
Sure.
They asked me to come to the office. They told me exactly everything that we did. They told us that they tried different vendors and they'd heard we could do the solution for them. And they gave us the contract just like that. And it's the contract that,
Sure.
It's the contract that we've worked least for. I mean, there's nothing that we really did to make it happen. So it kind of gave me faith that, you know, when things go bad in the future, I usually just think about it to say, okay, that happened. So, you know, if we trust in God, he can always make a way. There's something that can happen. So
yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite moments.
Sure. That's amazing. I think that's an encouragement there. Deal City, 5 medium to long-term goals. Where is the company going?
So long-term, that's probably like 10 to 15 years for us. We want to be one of the biggest technology solutions company in Africa. Yes, that's our long-term goal. Short-term, we're working towards getting into different countries. Like I told you, we're trying to get into Botswana, South Africa. We're already doing Kenya and Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing in the short term.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. All right, how do our listeners contact you if they need your services in whatever country that they're currently at in Africa? After listening to this conversation, how do they get a hold of you? How do they follow you? Is there a website? Is there social media?
Yeah, so being a business, we're really active on LinkedIn. So if you check us out at Deal City Kenya, you'll find us there.
Yeah.
I also am on LinkedIn as Virgil Mushoshwi.
Yeah.
So you can follow us there, or you can just Google us, Deal City on Google, and it will appear on, you know, our website or different page.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic. Any last thoughts? And I'm thinking here, as someone who has gone this journey for 6 years or thereabouts, there are other young people who want to get into entrepreneurship. What would be your words of encouragement, maybe, or even maybe advice, whatever the case might be, as they look forward to also starting their own journey?
Yeah, I think entrepreneurship, first of all, I'll say it's not for everybody. It's like being it's like being a nurse. There's some qualities that you need to have in order to be able to do the job. So it's something that you really need to think about to say, is it something that you want to do?
Yeah.
Are you ready to be in it for the long haul, to take up all the stress and all that? And then the second thing is, because there's so many disappointments, so many ups and downs, you really need to love what you do. And be ready to learn about what you do. But I think one of the most fulfilling thing about being an entrepreneur is you have that freedom to have impact on so many things, not just your area. But when you do make, you know, extra resources, you're able to help out in so many other different ways and employ people and give advice and, you know, sort of guide. So it becomes very fulfilling if you're able to do it.
If you're able to do it, becomes very fulfilling. Thank you so much, sir, for your time this evening. And I wish you the best as you also in Zimbabwe, like you're saying there. May God continue to bless you and the work that you do. And of course, grow your company as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. May you have a good one. That was, of course, our entrepreneurship segment for today. We're talking to Virgil, telling us a little bit about his company and what is it that they do in the company. I do think that, you know, it is a data that's driving businesses today, and so businesses like his are very important for one to, you know, find, you know, things in your data that can help you then generate revenue out of that data. Data is currency these days.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.